Birthing from the Inside Out is a place where we gather to talk about how pregnancy and birth transform us. I'm your host, Shannon Backus, certified birth doula and childbirth educator for over 10 years. I hope you'll grab a cup of coffee and join us for fun, gritty, and educational conversations all about birth. From detailed birth stories to insights from birth professionals and birth-related services, each episode will help you evaluate just how transformed by birth you've been from the inside out. Disclaimer, this podcast does not provide medical advice or diagnoses. All content is for educational purposes only. Seek the advice and recommendations of your medical practitioner. On today's episode, I'm joined by my guest, Dr. Lauren Jordan, and her husband, Dean, in this special bonus episode. In the previous episode, Lauren shared her first transformational birth story. On this episode, Lauren and Dean share their challenges, joys, and triumphs from their experience with their second labor and birth. Every birth unfolds in a unique way, and I hope you'll enjoy discovering how the unfolding of their second birth transformed them from the inside out.
Even though I didn't know what I was doing, I was still just locked in. And I think learning how to do that, just trial by fire, but caring about every single little thing that your brain can wrap itself around as a way of supporting someone who's doing the real work. It'll forever be a part of our marriage. It's such a pivotal point in your relationship. And I think mistakenly it can not be. Like if you have a partner that if they choose to not be super present about it, they can miss out a lot on how to support their partner.
Welcome back to the show, Lauren, and welcome to your first Birthing from the Inside Out podcast, Dean. How exciting is this?
What a time to be alive.
Why don't you take a moment, Dean? I know our listeners are already familiar with Dr. Lauren, so why don't you take a moment and just tell us a little bit about who you are in the world and kind of what role you're filling right now.
I am Dr. Lauren's husband.
How does that feel? Husband of a doctor.
You know, it's awesome. I ask her a lot of things. She's the lead on many things.
Probably just like being married to anybody else, but with a prefix, that's all.
I am her husband. We have two children, and I am a sales estimator for Gill Athletics, which is a track and field equipment company, aka I am not in the birth business. So everything, you know, that I experienced and came away from was learning through Lauren and then obviously through you and all of our birth professionals. Before having our first child, I was just, just a track and field guy, I guess. I didn't really have much else to offer to the world. And now I just have this whole other side of me that is, I don't know.
You're a birth freak.
I kind of am.
Yeah.
Dean, we've even made birth TikToks together.
That did happen.
That did happen. That was a good one.
It was. Well, thanks for sharing who you are with us. And I'm just really excited to have you guys on as a couple. I think one of the most important and impactful things for me in this work is the idea that, you know, I am not just a bystander in the room. You guys chose to hire me as your doula, not only once, but twice, and have really welcomed me into your life. And so it's been fun to just get to know each other on a deeper level, other than just like, oh yeah, that's the dad. So that has been really fun for me with you guys. I know for our listeners, it's been one short week since Lauren, you shared your first birth experience, but in reality, you know, it's actually been a couple of months. When we recorded, Lauren, you were very pregnant, really anticipating that this baby was going to come, what, maybe within a week or 2 weeks. And so much has changed in your world. Do you guys want to kind of catch us up and share about your second birth?
It feels like a lifetime ago that we were talking about, you know, any day she could come and we could have another baby. And I think last time we recorded, I was in between prodromal labor episodes. So it seemed like what every Sunday evening, right before Dean would go to work on Monday morning, yeah. I would have contractions that were pretty significant, definitely. And they would, you know, be 4 minutes apart and then 7 minutes apart and then 10 minutes apart. And then it would be morning and Dean would go to work and labor, you know, labor in quotes, air quotes, would fade. And I'm like, well, dang, where is my baby? Like, when is she going to come out? So that started the whole long labor process of having her. It was very different than having our first Jeremy in that way too. It was just like, you know, my labor with Jeremy, as mentioned in the other episode, was super short and no one expected that. And I was in denial about that, about mm-hmm. being in labor, admittedly. And then my labor with Leah, it was very much like, oh, is this it? Is this, do we have to go right now? Like, is this the time? Because everyone says it's shorter the second time. Mm-hmm. And it was really short the first time. So do we have to go right now? You know, so it was a very different headspace for sure. And it was extremely defeating to be in prodromal labor for 2 weeks prior to actually having her.
Can we talk about maybe the details of that? So, you know, for those of us listening that don't really understand maybe birth terminology, let's talk a little bit about prodromal labor. So prodromal labor is when you're having actual good labor contractions, and then, you know, it could last 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, who knows how long it will last, and then it sort of just fizzles out, right? Yeah. And so yeah. It's not false labor. It's not anything like that. So it's really confusing both for partner and for mama. Could you walk us through what was that like, especially with Jeremy? It was like you lost your mucus plug and you were out the gate ready to go. And so with Leah, it was more your body was doing a lot of prep work and it did it in increments, right? So that's what prodromal labor is. Can you talk to us? How did you guys deal with that as a couple? Lauren, how were you dealing with that?
On personal level, I was unwell about it. I just kept thinking, like, where is my dang baby? I just want to have her. I just want to do it. This faking me out type thing is not going over well mentally for me. Not to mention I'm taking care of a toddler at the time. And we have, you know, like the logistics of when I do go into labor, my mom's going to come here and take care of Jeremy. And then we're going to go to the birth center, you know, that whole thing. So it just felt like it felt like all eyes were on me, especially after the first time that we didn't have the baby after I had contractions. And everyone was then asking me like, well, I thought you were having contractions, like, oh, you're still pregnant. And I had patients texting me and I had friends texting me. And I mean, it was getting ridiculous. And it was such a mind game. I didn't get into that headspace with Jeremy because I was only 39 and 1 when I had him. And I just have so much more respect for moms that carry longer than the first and that have, you know, that mind game to play, because it was such a mental thing for me, for sure. For us, I mean, it was hard because I kept thinking I was in labor and like he would, you know, have work the next day, because it was literally every single Sunday. It was 2 Sundays back to back. He was, you know, do I have to stay awake? Do I need to comfort you? Like, are we doing hip squeezes? Like, what do I go to sleep? What do I do?
Yeah, it was lots of reassuring, but I was having doubts myself. I mean, you get out the timer and you're like, yeah, you're at 411. By the textbook definition, we should be calling someone. So it's like, okay, let's text your mom, give her a little warning. Like, do you want to come now or do you want us to call you at 3 a.m. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. I just tried to focus on telling you that all work is good work, even though it feels like it's for nothing.
Yeah.
It's not for nothing. You know, your uterus is just doing what it needs to do, even though it's frustrating you. And I just kept focusing on that. I was like, you know what? This is just gonna, maybe it's not pretending, but we'll at least sort of pretend that this will make your labor easier. And there's no way to know whether it did or not, but
yeah,
all work is good work.
I love that perspective. And, you know, Dean, as a support person, we can see it sort of subjectively, right? So totally. we can look at that and we can say, yeah, we agree. You are having these good, strong contractions. They're consistent, but the labor just doesn't progress and eventually it fizzles out.
Yeah.
So that's really hard. And as support people, we genuinely mean like you are doing good work. I know, Lauren, we had so many text conversations, and I know probably by the end you were just like, oh, I'm so over what she's saying. But really, genuinely, you know, it is one of those things that is so hard to work with, especially when you're at the end of your pregnancy, you're ready for this baby to be here, you're ready to snuggle, and even just to go through that birth experience, to be on the other side and to know what that story is. So after, you know, these several weeks of prodromal labor for you guys, talk to us about what you were thinking when the actual labor started. Were you in denial? Were you, did you embrace it? Were you apprehensive? What sorts of things went through your mind?
I thought it was all fake. After the second Sunday of prodromal contractions and no baby, I was like, okay, well, this baby is going to be 13 years old before it comes out. So I'm just never having the baby, and that's fine. We're just going to carry on with my huge belly and make my life the way it is. And then it was kind of dramatic. I lost my entire mucus plug at once, all of it. And even then I was like, okay, like, you know, could be weeks, who knows, it could grow back. And, you know, meanwhile, I'm 39 and four. So no, it wasn't going to grow back probably. But and I remember it was like 10 o'clock at night, I think, when I lost my plug, and I told Dean, yeah. I was like, oh yeah, like the whole thing just came out, but I'm not feeling much of anything. Probably prodromal labor again. Haha. You know, we just went to bed and I didn't really go to sleep. I was kind of having contractions here and there, and then they started picking up pretty aggressively. But I'm like, well, this feels very similar. Like it's just that kind of contraction again. I'm not going to pay much attention to it. But I think around 2:30 is when I finally had to wake Dean up and just be like, hey, this is a little bit more than I can handle alone. So I'm going to need you to wake up. And
yeah, I got you downstairs. I mean, that was a second rodeo for me. So there were some signs that I could just catch on a little bit. Like you can just, when you're watching her do her work and the way she's behaving, I was like, okay, let's go downstairs. And you were pacing. And I was like, oh, she's starting to do the thing. Like this is, Even in the prodromal episodes, we'll call them
episodes.
You were never behaving that way. It was just the timer that was telling us the severity, but you were never pacing and you were never closing your eyes in that way. It was just like nonverbal cues that it was clear as day to me that you were in labor. And you were so concerned with letting everyone down, Shannon and nurses and midwives and our parents and whoever.
Our photographer, videographer.
And I was like, you need to let me worry about all of them. That's my job, is to call who we need to call. You need to worry about doing what you're doing right now. And we came downstairs and you were doing that. You were walking between the kitchen and the family room, and I was calling people. We got in the car and we went there, and it was a lot less hectic than Jeremy's.
I do remember it being a little more organized than our first, because we weren't expecting him at 39 and one. Meanwhile, I had everything packed, you know, for weeks, because I thought the prodromal labor was real labor the first time. So
yeah,
everything was by the back door anyway this time around.
Yeah. So then we just drove to the birth center and everyone met us there and we got going.
It felt really smooth and it felt like internal chaos. Like before I saw my birth video, and I think Shannon, I think I spoke to you about this too. Like it felt like absolute chaos from beginning to end. And then I watched the video and I'm like, wow, everyone is so calm. I'm calm. Why am I so calm? Internally, I was not well.
It was a well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
It was very smooth.
I do think, Lauren, that is one thing that women don't often talk about, you know, when they're having normal, natural, physiological births. Your mind tends to go to that chaotic place. And I think that, you know, it's just everything that's happening within you, even with your breaks and contractions, it just feels chaotic. It feels loud. It feels bright. Even when you're in a calm, safe, quiet, dim, you know, dimly lit room, it does tend to internally feel so loud.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about it like that, because it totally did. It felt like I mean, I was self-conscious about how much noise I was making in labor. And, you know, the videographer, our friend, she was like, no, you were really not making that much noise, like at all in my body. I'm like, I feel like I'm absolutely screaming.
And Dean, I also wanted to go back and talk about what you were mentioning about the physical differences that you were seeing in Lauren.
Yeah.
You know, with the prodromal labor versus the actual labor. I think that that's really interesting because I often will tell clients, you know, you will know when it's labor. You will know when this is not going to go away. You will know when these contractions change. And so, Lauren, even though you weren't really accepting the reality that, hey, mm-hmm. this is it, like you are in labor this time, Dean was seeing that. And, you know, as I've been in doula practice now for 11 years, I have been able to, like you were saying, Dean, just pick up on some of those cues that are not really visible to people who are doing this for the first or second time. Yeah. And so I think that's important for our listeners to know, to trust your intuition, to trust what you're seeing, to evaluate and say like, hey, this actually looks a lot different than it did last Sunday night.
Yeah.
True. If I could tell myself in those prodromal states, like, if you are questioning if it's real, it's not real. Like if you're thinking, is this a labor? Then it's probably not.
Right. Yes. Well, especially active labor, right? Because, right.
Yes.
You know, once you're in active labor, your brain just turns off. And so you really are focusing on survival and getting through the contractions. Yeah. If you're asking, is this labor? Am I in labor? You're right. You probably either are in very early labor or not in labor at all.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So but once you got to the birth center and, you know, your team started showing up, I know I arrived shortly after you guys got there, and Lauren, I think we locked eyes, and I think you said something to the sentiment like, what if this just isn't it? Even once you got to the birth center, you were still kind of doubting the fact that, yep, this is it. Dean and I were watching you pace, you know, watching your different positions that you were trying and your sound. So take us from there. Take us through the birth, what it was like. So, you know, you arrived at the birth center, still doubting, like, is this labor? What are we doing?
Even on the way there when I was contracting, and I didn't want to let everyone down, and I didn't want more eyes on me just like waiting for me to have the baby, you know, like I already felt like that so much. So I just didn't want everyone at 3 o'clock in the morning to come to the birth center to meet me there when it wasn't real. So I was super self-conscious of like every single contraction between them. I was like, okay, now that was the last one. Now it's going to stop and we're going to go home and it's going to be another late night and I have to take care of a toddler and be super pregnant again tomorrow. Obviously that was not the case, but that's every single in between. That's what I was thinking. And I remember you asking me, what are you thinking about right now? Because you can kind of see my thoughts going away and carrying me into a different place than just focusing on the labor. And you asked me that. And I said, I don't think it's real. And I remember like, that's one of my vivid memories of the labor, but also you feeding me a Lara bar. That's one.
I did force feed you that.
I'm glad you did. Yeah. So we are at the birth center. I remember the midwife was filling up the tub because she's a friend of mine and she knows how much the tub saved my first labor. And yeah, we labored in the tub for a bit. We walked around. I was on the toilet. I did that thing that you told me to do, the scooping and lifting. What was that?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the abdominal lift and tuck.
Yes, that was really special. That was unique.
That was a turning point.
Yeah, I feel like that's what kicked everything into high gear. But then I got back in the tub, and I feel like I was very... For as fuzzy as it is now, thank you to my hormones, I feel like during the process, I was very lucid, which was extremely different than my first. Like my first labor and delivery, I was very in that like hypnotic primal state. And this time around, I was not at all. I couldn't get into that headspace. I couldn't lose myself. I couldn't just give in. I was fighting my body the entire time.
And do you think, Lauren, that impacted the difference in the pain level you experienced?
Absolutely, I do. Yes, 100%. With my first, I wouldn't even describe it as painful. And then the second time, I don't really have words to describe the feeling, but intense pain, I guess pain. at moments pain for sure, but not like constant. I don't know. It was very different than my first. It was more intense, definitely. It was like, so I'm a golfer and I like to use the analogy, like, so my contractions didn't get closer than what, 3 or 4 minutes apart the whole time?
It was no closer than four, but oftentimes there was double digit weights sometimes.
Yeah.
Even when you were going to deliver in the next hour and a half.
Yeah.
We had like an 11 minute one time, and you were like under 2 hours from delivery. We were like, what was that?
So that was another reason why I thought I was not in real labor too, because like my contractions really never got that close together. So, but I like to use the analogy of like, if you're a golfer and you're sitting on the tee box, just waiting 30 minutes to hit a ball, like my goodness, you can't get into the rhythm. I couldn't lose myself because it was, you know, you're in a contraction and you start to lose yourself and you come right back out of it for 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
It was hard.
You were doing a lot of things out of the tub, you know, the abdominal lift and tuck. I know we use the toilet a lot, and then kind of moving back into the tub. Did you feel like the tub was as beneficial to you during Leah's labor as it was during Jeremy's? Did you feel the same amount of relief using the water this time?
I wouldn't say I felt the same amount of relief as far as like pain or intensity, but I do think it was like my safe place. Mm-hmm. Like I felt comfortable, and it was actually the same bathtub that I gave birth to Jeremy in. So it just felt like nostalgic to me in that way too. And it was just like, it was my zone. Like that's where I wanted to have her. And that's where I felt like I could. And that's where I felt like I had the most mobility. And also I'm a little bit more modest. So even in those moments, I'm like, even the water like covering me, mm-hmm. and that felt safe.
So once your contractions, you know, continued to progress in intensity, like Dean was saying, you know, and you too, Lauren, you know, you acknowledge like, hey, these are kind of spaced out, but you know, all of us in the room, we could tell that the contractions were really beneficial, that they were progressive. And even though the timing didn't come super close together, that's not always the most important thing. You know, as long as the contractions are getting longer and stronger, and oftentimes we say closer together, but the equation doesn't always have to include those three things. So as you're in the labor, talk to us about, you know, in the tub, you know, you start to kind of feel that urge to push. Talk to us about that portion of the labor.
In comparison to my first, it felt like my body would start the push and then I would just push on top of that. But this time it was almost like I had to initiate the pushing and then my uterus would, you know, help me kind of. It was very different than the first time. And it felt like, especially when she was, you know, crowning and when her head had come out, it felt as though I couldn't wait for the next contraction. Like I had to just get her out. It felt urgent, even though no one said it was. It just in my body felt again like chaos, and I just had to get her out as fast as I could, even though again that was not the case at all. Even in the video it looks so calm, but yeah, it just felt like if I started that my body would help me instead of vice versa this time.
Yeah, I love the difference in Jeremy's birth and Leah's birth. Obviously, we're not really comparing them as far as, oh, was this good or was it bad? But it is really interesting that, you know, you are living in the same body, same uterus, different baby, which actually makes a huge difference in the labor. My guess is maybe Leah's positioning was just a little off. Jeremy came pretty quickly, and you know, Leah, you had to work, you know, you were working longer. You had those many nights of prodromal labor where your uterus was probably just trying to help her get into a good position. And so that's why it's important when we're having a normal physiologic birth is that we wait, right? We wait on our body. We wait on the baby. If mom and baby are healthy, we just leave it alone. And we can do things like abdominal lift and tucks or sitting on the toilet or lunges or getting in and out of the tub to kind of help with those different position changes to get baby in the best position. But babies are smart and they know how to be born. And obviously, Leah knew exactly how to be born. So Lauren and Dean, why don't you share with us a little bit, you know, after experiencing that prodromal labor and then going through the doubt of like, is this actually labor? And then the moments of her crowning and, Lauren, you delivering her and her coming right up onto your chest. Talk to us about those moments. What was that like for you guys?
I do want to touch on the positioning that you mentioned really quickly. We forgot to mention Saturday before late delivery, Lauren went in to see the nurse and she had you do some, the midwife, she had to do some exercises. And we're kind of blaming the prodromal labor on Leah's positioning, like in retrospect, because she did some like really basic exercises, like positioning exercises to get Leah in a better position. And then she came out,
The next day.
with the next day, like labor started the next day. That is the positioning point is a really important one. When she first came out, I don't know, it was very emotional, obviously. You learn the love that you have for your kid already. Like we have one child already. And when they come out, it's like it's a familiarity, but in a new life form, obviously. In our case, it was a girl and we had a boy, so that was new. I don't know, just this wave of like protective love for me, at least. It was so much longer of a journey, it felt like, than Jeremy's, obviously, with the 2 weeks of work. Yeah, I don't know. It was similar, but very different. It's a new life form, and every baby's different, and every birth is different. And gosh, I don't know. Also, it was overnight, so that was very different emotionally.
Everyone had been awake for hours and hours and hours, and so there's that. But I think for me, I mean, physically, as soon as she came out fully, I had absolutely no pain. And that's how it was with Jeremy too. So I kind of expected that and was looking forward to it and working toward it. And yeah, I again felt like I could run through a brick wall and I could do anything and I could run the Boston Marathon like right then and there, placenta in still and everything. Like I felt unbelievable. And like Dean said, just like the overwhelming joy and obviously love, and it was really special.
Have you enjoyed listening to Birthing from the Inside Out podcast? By now, we all know about the algorithm. By leaving your ratings and reviews on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts, you'll help other people just like you find the show. Birth transforms us all from the inside out. So by simply following, rating, and reviewing, you'll be helping other families have positive, transformational experiences as they carry these stories into their births. Let's take a moment to hear from our sponsor. Whether it's your first baby or your last baby, you never want to forget the adventure of bringing your child earthside. Birth video and photos by ILEA Productions will forever capture your unique birth story. Don't let those special moments slip away. With ILEA's skills and expertise, she can capture every little detail from the first cry of your newborn to the laughter and love shared between family members. You deserve to have these memories preserved in the best way possible. And that's where ILEA comes in. So why wait? ILEA has over 10 years of experience in content creation and storytelling, and she's deeply passionate about helping women to tell their birth stories, complete with every beautiful, powerful, and courageous moment. Visit ILEAProductions.com for more information about packages and pricing. Use my promo code TRANSFORMATION for 10% off. That's ILEAHProductions.com.
Let's talk about your postpartum recovery and the difference. Again, I mean, it's like Leah and Jeremy's births are two on the opposite ends of the spectrum. Just for our listeners, a reminder that, during your postpartum recovery with Jeremy, you had a hemorrhage, and so you were transported to the hospital. talk to us about, you know, Leah's born, she's on your chest, you're out of the tub, your placenta comes. Then what happens?
The midwives and I, we had an absolute foolproof game plan of, hey, I'm just not going to hemorrhage anymore. Like, that was the one and only time my body gets to do that, if that's fine with everybody. So we were going to do immediately postpartum a shot of Pitocin in my thigh. And then I always jokingly said, if you want to do another one, I have another thigh. You're welcome to. And we were going to latch her as soon as we could, lots of skin to skin, and get the placenta out, you know, in a timely manner, but not forcing it. So that was the game plan. And yeah, so she came out, we waited for the cord to completely like stop pulsing and be completely empty. And then Dean cut the cord. And then he, you know, did skin to skin with Leah. And they gave me Pitocin, I believe right then, like as soon as she was disconnected from me. And I was starting to bleed some in the tub. And I remember looking at you, Shannon, and I was like, oh, here we go. Mm-hmm. Round two. They're going to have to drag me out of here with this bathtub because I'm not going. but yeah, I mean, it was good. I think they caught it early enough that it stopped. I don't know if it stopped right then, but I think it stopped on the bed. And I didn't tear this time, so I'm sure that helped. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, after the placenta came out, I mean, they, you know, pushed on my belly a few times and there was some blood and nothing like the first time. And I say hemorrhage the first time. I mean, you know me, the air quotes with hemorrhage. I'm in denial about that still. Maybe forever.
That's such a special experience too. So, you know, in some ways you probably feel, and maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but you know, with Jeremy's recovery, you didn't really get that really sweet extended skin to skin bonding time because eventually you were separated from Jeremy, from Dean. You had to leave the birth center, go to the hospital to manage it. And so this time you got to stay and you got to do skin to skin. Talk to us a little bit about asking your families to come and Jeremy meeting her. What was that like?
Oh my gosh, it was the best. It was the best. I didn't even know how good it could be because I thought my first experience was phenomenal, even though I did get transferred, but this experience was just incredible. So we had her, you know, everybody was there and then it just so happened. It was like, I don't know, 9 o'clock and we're just like, oh, we should invite the parents to come. Yeah, 9 o'clock a.m. Like our toddler's awake and Adam, he's already had breakfast, you know, whatever. So we called his parents and my mom was with Jeremy and everyone got to come and Jeremy had special moments, like just him coming into the room and meeting Leah. And we got some really sweet pictures of him meeting her. And yeah, it was, I mean, just the cutest thing I've ever seen in my life. And then, you know, all the grandparents came and met her and it was just very relaxed. Like I felt so chaotic during the labor and delivery. And then afterwards was pure bliss. Like I just felt so much love and I felt so loved. I mean, I got like Starbucks delivered to me and you made me oatmeal, Shannon. It was the best. Yeah. Are you going to talk about my oatmeal session?
Yeah, we could totally talk about your afterbirth first meal obsessions with Jeremy. It was a bagel with peanut butter. And then after Leah's birth, I made you some oatmeal and apparently you can't go a day without it.
I cannot and I will not. It is my comfort food. I seriously have it 2 to 3 times a day. She it's had it right so
before
good.
Before the podcast.
Yeah, I sent her a picture. It was right before we got onto the podcast. I ate my post-dinner oatmeal. So good.
I love that. And I may be stretching it a little bit here, but you know, the hormones that we release in labor and delivery and even postpartum, those are designed to help us bond not only with our baby, but with people in the room. And maybe your hormones are super powerful and you're bonding with these different food types.
So oatmeal and I cannot be separated.
We will have to discover how long this bond lasts.
I want to know if anyone else has experienced that.
Ooh, that's good.
With any of your clients.
Yeah, that would be a really interesting poll. So if you're listening and you have, you know, you've had your afterbirth, that first meal, you know, that obsession, and you can't live without that, why don't you send us an email, birthingfromtheinsideout@gmail.com, and let us know what those are. What are you addicted to after birth? That would be really fun.
I love that.
Thank you guys so much for sharing your birth experience and the similarities. And the majority were obviously differences. Previously, Lauren, you had shared how Jeremy's birth had transformed you. And so I'm wondering either, you know, collectively, you and Dean sharing that transformation from Leah's birth, or just individually, if you each want to kind of share how her birth has transformed you.
I think individually for me, we would like this to be our last baby, God willing. And I think just like mourning my fertility, like mourning that phase of my life and feeling complete with her adding her to the family. And in that way, I've been transformed definitely. But again, full circle of like just being a mother to a baby again, to two kids. I mean, it's an everyday process currently figuring out how to be a mom to two instead of one. What about you, Dean? What do you think?
Well, like I sort of mentioned in my intro, I mean, we had Jeremy and all of a sudden, you know, I'm a father. And as the birth support person and not the birther, you learn, or I hope you learn, how to really focus on your spouse or whoever you're supporting in a way that you never would have been able to before. You could read a zillion books and it wouldn't matter. It's a physical, spiritual, mental experience that you just can't replicate. So you learn all these things, and then you have a second or a third, maybe, or a fourth, or any subsequent birthing experiences. And then you notice differences, obviously, because they're not going to be identical. And you pick up on stuff that you learned from the first one. And even though there's a lot of stuff that's different, you still catch things from your partner where you're like, I recognize this. Like, I know this, and I know this because I paid so much attention last time. Even though I didn't know what I was doing, I was still just locked in. And I think learning how to do that, just trial by fire, but caring about every single little thing that your brain can wrap itself around as a way of supporting someone who's doing the real work. Leah's in particular, it was like reinforcing things that I maybe had forgotten and just all of a sudden spurted out in the moment, maybe learning a few new things. Yeah, it'll forever be a part of our marriage. It's such a pivotal point in your relationship. And I think mistakenly it can not be. Like if you have a partner that, I'm not trying to like poo-poo on anyone, but if they choose to not be super present about it, they can miss out a lot on how to support their partner and their kid.
If you're not like an active part of the birthing process.
Yeah. And, you know, that's if that's agreed upon, that's okay. You know, there are couples that operate that way, but I just think you're missing out if you do.
Thanks for sharing those transformations, you guys. I know that one of the main pillars or foundations of this podcast is to talk about that transformation and how when we enter into a birth, we don't leave the same. And so that applies to all levels of the people involved in the birthing experience, whether, you know, it's a tech at the hospital, or it's a physician or a midwife, or the birthing woman, or the partners, you know, transformation happens on all levels with birth. And so I really appreciate that you were vulnerable enough to talk about, Dean, the confidence that you gained in supporting Lauren. And even just, you know, recognizing because you watched so well and you supported so well during Jeremy's birth, that then in Leah's labor, you were able to kind of see some of those key characteristics of things that Lauren needed or the changes in her labor. And although it was challenging, both labors were challenging, you both united over those challenges, and that's transformed you. How does that transformation affect your life today? How does that affect your marriage? How does it affect the way you parent, either together or independently?
I have kind of a funny thing. Like when I'm having a really hard day with the kids, I just say, gosh, I pushed you both out of my vagina with no drugs. I can do anything.
That is great. Do need to remember that. Even mamas who have, you know, cesarean births or give birth vaginally, whether you're doing it in a water tub or you have an epidural or you're in the OR, you as the mother have given birth to this child. And so I love, Lauren, that you are taking that and saying, you know what, I did the really hard thing and I gave birth to you and I can do anything. And I think at the core, that is what birth does to all of us, right? Whether we are supporters or we're actually giving birth, just to have this within us to say, I did this really hard thing, so I can do this hard thing today in my life. Would you like to share one thing you loved about Leah's birth?
Let's see.
What did you love?
I'll say two things. Number one, how plump she was when she came out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Part of it was Jeremy was a string bean. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of expected her to be a string bean, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. But she was just such a chunky monkey. And we were like, oh, sis, you're doing great. Good job.
And her cheeks still. Yeah. She still has the cheeks.
They're incredible.
They're so good.
You just want to beep, 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 you know. And then I was not a fan of overnight labor. However, morning delivery was so fun. Everyone was like, oh, I've showed up here at work and, you know, let's see this new baby. It aligned it perfectly with everyone's Monday morning schedule. So that was great.
That was really cool. Something I loved about her, everything. I loved being able to grab her out of the water and bring her to me. I thought that was really special and something I had forgotten about. So thank you, Shannon, for reminding me and everybody else that I wanted to do that in that moment. And how much hair she had and how cheesy she was. Those were fun things. Yeah, yeah, birthday frosting. Those were fun because Jeremy was bald and no cheese. So it was just completely opposite of him. And it was fun.
She actually had so much vernix on her that your photographer, Ailea, had posted something on Instagram, the video of her coming up out of the water with all of the vernix on her. And people were literally commenting, like, what is that baby covered in? What is all over that baby? And, you know, in the birth world, we call it birthday frosting, right? So really that vernix is there to protect the baby, keep the skin moisturized. And then once they come out, you know, it has a lot of good protective properties, helps baby to regulate her temperature. Typically though, babies that are full term don't have a ton of vernix. It seemed like, you know, Leo was right on time with all the vernix that she had. So that was a really fun, yeah, I think there was vernix everywhere. There was vernix in the tub. There was vernix on me.
Yeah.
You know, it was all over. So
we couldn't even get her clothes on, Shannon. Do you remember that? We couldn't even squeeze her in. She was too goopy. Yes.
That was hilarious. You just kept looking at me like, I do not think this is going to fit. She was so cheesy. Oh, could not put the onesie on her.
What about you? What was your favorite? What was your favorite thing as the doula in the room?
That's a great question. Thanks for asking that. I think for me, I mean, maybe I'll cry about it, but that's kind of a theme on this podcast. I'm like, you know, the weeping doula or something. But I think for me is seeing the two of you grow in confidence. If I think back to Jeremy's labor, the first time you go through labor and delivery, you have zero clue what to experience. And you can read all the books, you can take all the classes, you can hire the doula who tells you all the things that are actually not going to happen in your labor. and, you know, you just are kind of along for the ride. Then I think, you know, with Leah's pregnancy, you guys grew in confidence of, you know, we know what to expect. We know how to get through this. We know how to work together as a team. But to see the two of you, even through the challenges of that prodromal labor, to encourage each other and to be vulnerable with each other, and just the confidence that, Dean, the first time you called me when when Lauren was in labor, I remember you just had this frantic sound in your voice, like, Shannon, she's on the ground, I can't get her up, she needs me, she's making all these sounds. And I'm pretty sure when you called me to wake me up with Leah, you were just like, hey, you know, we're heading to the birth center. If you want to meet us there, you know, you were just so cool and calm and confident. And I think that is one of my favorite things to see, especially with Leah's labor and birth, is just the confidence and the empowerment that I think you guys gained, even though not everything went as you planned for Jeremy's birth, right? Especially the postpartum experience, and to just trust the process and to say, you know, we're going into this and we're going to trust it, and ultimately to really have to trust the process because it wasn't straightforward like Jeremy's was. So I think ultimately is just seeing and watching the two of you grow in vulnerability and encouraging each other, and ultimately I think in confidence of Lauren, my body was created to do this, and Dean saying, yes, it is, you can do it. I think really overall, that is my favorite thing. And I know it's not one thing. Yeah.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Can I respond to that?
Absolutely. So, yeah.
You are spot on. We were a lot more confident on that video that you mentioned where they were commenting about the vernix. There was another comment on there that was saying how, because I had my eyes closed, that I looked like I was the one in labor. And I think that looks like an experienced husband who knows when he needs to rest and knows when he needs to jump to action. Mm-hmm. That is an experienced dude that knows when to do what.
Mm-hmm. Haters gonna hate.
That's right.
That's right. And even at one point, you know, during, I don't know what time it was, maybe 4 or 5 a.m., I actually told you, Dean, I said, why don't you go lay down for a little bit? I think contractions had spaced out a little bit. Yeah. And I could tell you were tired, you know, you had been up all night. And so I said, why don't you lay down? I mean, for those people who haven't been at the birth center, you know, the beds are literally like 3 feet from the tub, not very far. And so I had just mentioned, like, maybe you could just rest for a little bit. And you did. And literally after the next contraction, Lauren was like, where is Dean? And it wasn't, you know, a matter of her saying, like, oh, he's over there in the bed sleeping. It was just she wanted you close by and she needed your support. And I think that, you know, as you guys continue in life, that same thread is going to come up where things get really hard or scary, or things that just happen in life are going to happen, and you're going to need each other. And I think that birth teaches us that too, that, you know, we cannot do life without each other. And so as her main person, you know, you hopped right up and you're like, I'm right here. That was a really beautiful moment for me to see. Lauren, you were not alone by any means, but you needed Dean in those moments. And that was really powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember that.
As we wrap up our time here, I just wanted to ask a few more questions, but what's one thing you wish you knew or that you want expectant families to know before they give birth?
That's a good question.
I'm thinking there's a lot.
No, we have so many things.
Man.
I would say just like from the birthing woman perspective is to just trust your body and know that your body has done it and your body has a memory and it will do it again. And to just trust that process. Like I was fighting it the entire time and it still happened. So just trust it and surrender to it as best you can. And it is the most beautiful thing. And I think if I didn't say this on my first episode with you, Shannon, I meant to say it, but it's when you have the privilege of bringing life into the world with your body, like it is the closest I've ever been to Jesus. It's the closest I ever will be until I get to heaven. And it's like peeling back the curtain of heaven for just a second to like be able to bring a life into the world is the most magical, miraculous thing that anyone could ever do. Dean? What's your answer?
How can you even follow that, Dean?
Yeah, I'm not. I can't. As the birth partner, I was thinking a little bit more practical, but now it makes me seem like not as interesting as you.
I think practical is really good. I think that men, you know, I don't think a lot of men are listening to this podcast, but I do think that for women who are preparing for their births, you know, they might give their partners a tip like, hey, on this podcast today, I heard this dude named Dean giving us this practical tip that he wanted expectant families to know.
Yeah. I think that we did our absolute best to arm ourselves with knowledge by gathering it from sources that we became to trust. You know, we assembled our birth team. We read some good books. We read some bad books. It's a lot to work through, but I just feel like the attitude of like tackling it together with an open mind of something that you're going to conquer together and figure out the best way to do it for you guys. And that sounds so generic and corny, but it's a recurring theme that you can look back through in your, if you're married or in just in a relationship. Like for us, I remember it was a lot like our wedding, but like more important and intense. Like we assembled this team that we felt great about for our wedding. And so there was this like familiarity of us working together to find professionals that would accomplish the goal that we wanted to. Yeah. Arming yourself with info and choosing to surround yourself with a team of people that you trust.
That's probably one of the most important aspects of planning and preparing to have a baby is what you just said, Dean, is making sure that you have the people surrounding you that are going to support the decisions that you make and help you make decisions that are in alignment with your values. And so I think you hit the nail on the head there with that. That's really great.
Yeah, thank you.
Was there anything else that maybe is on your mind or anything that you might have prepared or thought about talking about on the podcast, but I haven't asked you any questions about, or any extra, you know, little tidbits that you might want to throw in?
More practical stuff, I guess. I mean, I've heard other birth stories from husbands, you know, about not knowing what to do during labor. I'm not going to go through every single thing, but that's something that we trained and learned how to do, like hip squeezes and, you know, just some of those basic maneuvers where the birth partner can be helping the birther like the whole time. And I often will talk to people and they'll have this sense of helplessness. They're like, what am I going to do to help her? And it's like, well, I can tell you a lot of things because I learned how to do all of them. And they're not hard. Mm-hmm. They just require you to pay attention and show up. Like that's, they're not technically difficult. Mm-hmm. Just the learning the ways to support.
I think that the traditional maternal health care system too is set up in a way that oftentimes not only takes away the birthing mom's autonomy or her confidence, but I think it does the exact same thing with partners.
Yeah.
And oh, you stand over here, you know, stand against the wall here, and you can watch from across the room, where, you know, in reality, that mom needs her partner right there close beside her. I don't think that the system is set up well. I don't think that there are great resources, often easily accessible for partners to help support the birthing mom. So I think that is a great point. You just got to get in there. You got to train for it. And you just, when it comes down to it, you just do it.
I think on those same lines, my least favorite thing people say to me in my office or otherwise is, things don't always go according to plan, so why plan for it? Like, why have a birth plan? And I would argue the exact opposite. Like, you should absolutely have a birth plan because of that. Like, you have to know what you want. Like, for us with this birth, like, I knew I did not want to be transferred. Therefore, we did Pitocin in the leg. We did more skin to skin. We latched her immediately. Like, we had all the things in place because I was so strong about my wish.
And you were surrounded by people there that knew what you wanted. And so we were able to intimately support you in those things along the way. Where again, when people are part of the system, it's just everything kind of just gets lost. It's like, okay, well, we're going to do the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. So that individualized care and having a birth plan and talking about that with your provider is so important, because you need to set the stage before the show begins. You cannot have full on musical if you've not practiced or prepared before you get on stage. So I think that is a really wise piece of encouragement, Lauren, with the birth plan and your birth preferences. Well, I just want to thank you guys for taking the time out of your day, you know, not only to share Leah's story, but to talk about the transformation that has happened in your lives, not only once, but twice. And how the different transformations are affecting your life today. You know, I just really appreciate you pouring into our listeners and giving them some practical ideas of things to do to prepare for their birth and to work through the challenges maybe that other people might be facing. So thanks again so much for sharing your experience and your wisdom, and really, really grateful to have you guys on the show. I love how powerful stories are in our lives, how much they can change a person, how our stories tell others about who we are and where we are headed, and not just how much those stories can change us, but also change the trajectory of our lives. Thank you for spending time in your day to dive deep into stories of how birth has transformed all of us from the inside out.